All right, it's time for Radio Naturopath. Welcome to Radio Naturopath. This is the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. All right, so we got numerous things that we can talk to you about today, not the least of which is, honey, it's hot outside. Or is it baby, it's hot outside? No, that's baby, it's cold outside. It's hot, and that is the way it's going right now. And I just wanted to remind you to mind the heat. If you're listening in the local area, just so you know, if you are in a place where, if you live in Greater Mansfield, there are cooling centers. If you don't have adequate air conditioning, or you just don't have access to a way to cool down, you can go to cooling centers. And the Mansfield Community Center has been designated as one. So has the Mansfield Public Library, as well as the Mansfield Senior Center. You can go to any of those places if your home is not adequately cooled, or if you live somewhere where you just do not have adequate cooling, and you can go there as a cooling station. You're welcome to stay there as long as it's hot. So that's kind of a nice thing. So I want you to remind you that find ways to keep yourself cool. If you're not acclimated to the heat, you might not want to go out in it, or you might want to go to a cooling center. This is a really good day to majorly hydrate. And this is a day where I'd say, if you are doing any kind of physical activity, you might want to supplement not just with water, but you perhaps want to do some kind of a sport drink. And sport drink can be simple as one part fruit juice to three parts water and a pinch of salt. You don't necessarily need to buy a designated sport drink that may have artificial colors and may have artificial sweeteners in it. You can salt your food to taste if you want. Remember that that there's new thinking scientifically that one of the reasons people have too much salt in their diets is because there's too much salt in processed food, and people are eating excessive quantities of salt in their processed food to the exclusion of produce, where they're getting where you would get things like magnesium and potassium. If you don't eat a lot of processed food, it's fine to salt your food to taste. And on a day like today, you might be low in salt. And that doesn't necessarily mean go ahead and eat a whole bunch of potato chips, but it might mean that if you have your big healthy salad, that you put some good quality salt on top of it. Like I said, another way to do it is to have some one part your favorite fruit juice, three parts water, and a pinch of sea salt. That'll do it for you. You can also, I am a huge fan of coconut water on a day like today. I feel like coconut water, as long as you like the taste and it agrees with you, coconut water is very high in potassium, and it's very bioavailable. So when you drink it, it gets in easily, and the carbohydrate and the fluid, and if you add a pinch of salt to it, will help to bring the water into your body faster than water itself. So if you're sweating excessively, it's okay today to do a bit of sport drink or to do coconut water with a pinch of sea salt. I think that's fine. If you're not sweating excessively and you're protected in an air-conditioned environment, you don't have to do that. You can just drink extra water. But going outside, you might sweat more. And if you're working outside, if you're one of the good people that's been working on the roads. The other day, I was going flying down Jennings Road in Windham, and I saw some guys working on the road. When Jennings Road in Windham is smooth as glass now because they did a wonderful job. So as I was flying down the road, I actually slowed down to tell one of the workers, to thank one of the workers for making the road beautiful.
Yes, we do love the pavement gods, don't we?
Goddesses. Yes. Goddesses. Yes, we do.
Goddesses, excuse me.
Right. Yes, we all hail the pavement goddess. Yes, we've got a short stretch of Bassett's Ridge Road now that is looking very awesome. And it's so smooth. It's just incredible. They decided to pave it instead of chip seal it, which I highly appreciate. Yeah, there's a few spots that have recently been paved, which is very exciting. It's very exciting for riding your bike on. And it's just very exciting because it's not so bumpy. Anyway, so making sure to stay cool today. Make sure if you're sweating excessively. So signs of heat exhaustion. Signs of heat exhaustion would be that you're having some rapid and shallow breathing. You're sweating excessively. Your skin feels clammy. You might have some nausea. You might even get sick. You might even vomit. But if you're having any symptoms like that, you need to get cool right away. You need to get out of the sun. You need to drink extra fluids and you need to rest. And watch out, that can happen today. And that's, so if you're in heat exhaustion, that's not as bad as if you're having heat stroke. And heat stroke is where you stop sweating, your skin gets very hot, and your temperature starts to rise dangerously. And a person like that, that is a medical emergency, and that requires emergency care. So if you see somebody and you think that's going on, you need to call 911 for them. I was out at, I was at the Farm to Fork Fondo in Maine, and there were people who were suffering from the heat. And there was one guy in particular that I stopped to look after because he complained of difficulty breathing. And so once you hear something like that, you're going to stay with that person until help arrives. If you can help them, that's great. And I didn't have a way to transport him, so I called for help and the fellow got transported. And, that at that moment, if somebody's in medical distress like that, nothing else is important. You know, it's time to stay with that person until they get the proper medical care, whatever else is going on. And one of the things you're going to encounter is people are going to say to you, no, no, I'm fine. People will say, no, no, I'm fine for a number of reasons. It's because they're not thinking straight. It's because they're embarrassed. It's because they don't want to ruin your day. This gentleman said that to me, I'm ruining your day. I said, no, you're not. So one of the things you have to do is if you think somebody is in medical distress and they're telling you, no, no, I'm fine, go away. The only thing that you can't do, first of all, you can't touch them unless they give you permission to touch them. Once they go down, if they become unconscious, then you can touch them. But if they are conscious, you can't touch them without permission. And when I asked to touch this gentleman because I wanted to take his pulse, and I asked him if it was okay to touch him, and that was the proper thing to do, and he agreed, and so I went ahead and checked his pulse. So you have to make sure that you ask or else you can get sued. So you have to be careful. Although, generally, if you get sued, you are covered by Good Samaritan laws. But if somebody says, no, no, I'm fine, and you're not sure if they are fine, it's perfectly fine to stay with them. Even if they're telling you to go away, you can stay with them. If you think it's medically critical for you to stay with them, you don't listen to them and stay. And, you know, you can be really friendly to them, explain to them that it's not. I mean, I used every trick in the book with this guy. I was like, look, this is more important. I'm a physician. I can say I'm a physician, which is going to be very reassuring to the person. I'm like, I'm a physician. I'm going to stay with you. It's my job. I don't mind. This is way more important than my bike ride. There was no way that guy could have gotten weird and violent at me and I would have still stayed because, you know, I was concerned about his medical condition. So you're going to encounter that where people are like, no, no, I'm fine. And if you don't think they're fine, you say you use your best diplomacy skills to calm them down and you stay until the proper, if you can't provide immediate emergency care and you're waiting for care to arrive, then you stay with them regardless. So you're going to find that. And so the other thing about heat, the interesting thing about heat that I explained to this gentleman is that you never know when it's going to be you, and you could be a really fit person and you could be really healthy and it could hit you all of a sudden. I was very fortunate because, you know, I have a pretty high heat tolerance. I didn't used to. When I met you, Ron, I remember one day you sent me on a bike ride. I went on a nice bike ride by myself. You weren't available to ride with me that day, so I went on a bike ride. And I remember I went to Bigelow Hollow, and it was a hot day. And I had to pull over and drink, and I was very nauseous. And that doesn't happen to me anymore. So you can acclimate to working out in heat. Not everybody can, and even very fit people. People are different in their ability to tolerate heat. I think some of it is, I'm Jewish. I have a tiny bit of Mediterranean blood, and you know, people with a little bit of Mediterranean blood tend to tolerate heat better. I have seen that people who have more Nordic blood, they don't tolerate heat as well. I had a partner once who had trouble sweating. He was very fair and he had red hair. And he didn't sweat well, so he didn't tolerate heat well, but he tolerated cold a lot better than I did. Hmm. And so some people don't sweat well. They don't sweat effectively. As you know, I'm a big sweater.
I have noticed that.
I'm a big sweater. I sweat at night. I sweat all the time. You know, when I'm working out, you've got puddles on the floor. But my sweating is effective because it cools me off. So I'm very comfortable with sweating. I'm not comfortable sweating in bed. But I can't help. Well, I mean, there's probably
Nor
some things I could do to help that. I know we have to talk, but there's some things we can talk about that.
Okay.
We can move on to that in a moment, but, don't be embarrassed if one of your deals is you don't cool off well. It's okay. That's who you are. That's how you are. You do whatever you need to do to keep yourself cool. And if you know that, today might not be the best day to do your time trial or to go out and ride really hard or go for that exercise outside. Today might be a good day to, if you're going to do your exercise, do it early in the morning. It's too late for early in the morning. It's hot out already. Wait till it cools down in the evening and, you know, bring out the bug spray. So I just want to make you aware of that. Once again, if you are in the town of Mansfield, and you're not connected with the university is nice and cool. I can tell you, I'm sitting in the studio here. The university is nice and cool. A lot of schools are either closed in Eastern Connecticut or having early dismissal today because there's no air conditioning in the schools. But if you live in Greater Mansfield, you can go to the Mansfield Community Center. You can go to the Mansfield Public Library. You can go to the Mansfield Senior Center and you can hang out there and get cool. So please do that and watch out for your own self in terms of how much you're sweating, how thirsty you are, how hydrated you are. Make sure to stay hydrated and watch out for your buddies. Watch out for anybody who's around you. And again, if they say, no, no, I'm fine, and you don't think they're fine, stay with them and make sure they get the proper care. If you have to call 911, do that. If you have nursing services in whatever facility you're at, get a hold of them. If you're at a sporting event and somebody can come and pick them up and bring them to a place where they can get cool, do that. Whatever you need to do to get them cool and to get them care is a good thing. All right. So we have other things that we can talk about today. So we were... something jumped out at me. I just wanted to bring up because it just touched me. I have a dear friend named John who lives in New Jersey. So big shout out to him. And he's got a daughter who has type 1 diabetes. So type 1 diabetes is near and dear to his heart. And so he also sponsors or he's a big participant in the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and he helps to train people for JDRF rides, and they raise money to support the JDRF, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Anyway, so a huge cause for him is to help to get the price of insulin down, because people with type 1 diabetes need to inject or have insulin in a pump or they die. And that is how it goes. We have a healthcare system in this country where you have to pay for all of your medical care and you have to pay for insulin. And insulin, because the market is allowed to do this, the price of insulin has been going up. And so so people will get their insulin from Canada because it's a lot cheaper. Why would you want to do that? What my feeling about people having to get a life-saving medication and have to spend their life savings to pay for it, to pay a significant portion of whatever they make to get a life-saving drug. There's something really, really wrong with that, and we're one of the few industrialized countries in the world that has to put up with that. They don't have to put up with that in most of the other industrialized countries in the world. They have health care where that stuff is taken care of. It makes absolutely no sense. So today, I happened to have Megyn Kelly on, and they had a story of this young woman, Hattie Saltzman, who was diagnosed with diabetes at age 16. And at age 19, her insulin copay skyrocketed to about half what you'd pay for a New York City apartment, a cheap New York City apartment. It was horrible. So she was rationing her insulin and splitting it with her also diabetic father. So this is horrific. So she, at her age, because she's a college student, she can still be under her parents' medical care. So she separated from that. So they would go by, instead of going by her parents' income, she went by her own, and that dropped her copay to much, much lower. So a much more affordable level. So what the heck? This is pretty criminal. I'm not sure why this is going on. Why people who need a life-saving drug have to pay, significant chunks of their income to pay for a life-saving drug. Insulin is not something that you can do without. If you have type 1 diabetes, that means that your pancreas does not make insulin. You need insulin to live. If you have no insulin, you die. That insulin is necessary to life. It puts sugar into your blood so you can do everything that you do in your body. It runs your brain. Never mind. It runs every single cell in your body needs glucose. So if you don't have glucose, you die. And so in order to get the glucose into the cells, you need insulin. And if you don't make insulin, your life is in danger. And that's how it goes. There are things you can do to lower the amount of insulin that you need. For example, if you take, I put people on fish oil, or I've had people taking fish oil, and they become more insulin sensitive so they can lower their insulin needs. I also have a patient who is on a ketogenic diet, and she was able to cut the amount of insulin that she uses, which is very exciting. That's a very exciting, and that's something you have to look at. If you do a low-carb diet, you will probably need to lower, if you have type 2 diabetes, you will need to lower your oral hypoglycemics, and if you have type 1 diabetes, or you can be type 2 and also be using insulin. That happens too. It's just a different mechanism as to how you have the diabetes. But there are things that you can do to lower your need for insulin if you need insulin. But you still need it, okay? And to gouge people of most of their income so they can stay alive is criminal, violent, and it's just wrong. And so I sincerely hope that things change in this country so that doesn't continue to happen.
It's organized white collar crime for the profit of others.
It's really dark and ugly.
It's pretty dark and ugly.
Yeah.
So, question on this, you were talking a little earlier about being really hot and dealing with the heat and all.
Mm-hmm.
How about sodium levels? Like, you want people to increase their sodium levels?
Yeah,
what's safe
that.
And what's not?
I talked about that.
Oh, you did already?
Yeah.
I was on the phone.
Yeah.
All right. Missed it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah. So as I was saying that, I'll just go through this briefly. But
yeah, that was our caller was asking. So.
So briefly, here's what we talk when sodium. So. Let's talk about salt versus sodium. Sodium is measured separately in your blood from chloride. Salt is sodium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you're sweating excessively, you're going to sweat out salt. When you ingest fluid, salt and sugar enhance the absorption of water. So when you drink a beverage that has salt and sugar in it, The water gets in. It gets transported more readily than if you just drink plain water, which is why I'm always asking you, why are you just drinking plain water on your bike ride? You're going to get a better result if you want to hydrate quickly, especially you, where you have, your Ayurvedic Vata, you're kind of on the dry side. You have a harder time holding onto water in your body just constitutionally. You should be drinking sport drink all the time. And by sport drink, as I said, doesn't have to be purchased in the store sport drink. It could be your favorite fruit juice, whatever fruit juice sits well in your tummy. One part that, three parts water, pinch of sea salt, off you go. Or pinch of Himalayan salt, pinch of real salt, whatever you want. Mm. Right? And that's what you do. So let's just review again that the concern about salt and blood pressure. People are like, consume too much sodium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when people are eating a lot of processed food, processed food in boxes and packages, those things can have a lot of added salt. So they might be on the high side as far as sodium goes. But sodium and salt are not the enemy. You need salt to live. If you don't have enough salt, you're going to get dizzy. You might have blood pressure problems in the wrong direction. Your blood pressure could go too low. You need salt to have a good nerve function. And one of the reasons you get muscle cramps when you've been sweating a lot is not enough salt. It's not enough salt. It's not enough magnesium. It's not enough potassium, possibly calcium as well. So it's all of your minerals that keep your muscles calm. And salt, sodium, is very important in action potentials. That is the electrical impulse that happens in the nerve cell. So sodium is very important in your body. And when you sweat a lot, you do, in fact, sweat it out. This is another issue, is that people vary in terms of whether they are salty sweaters or not. So I am a salty sweater. So what that means is people vary in the amount of salt that comes out of their bodies when they in their sweat. And how do you know you're a salty sweater? So if you go out and you sweat a lot, you'll see salt rings on your clothes. And mm-hmm. I definitely do. Or you'll, this sounds gross, but you'll taste your, you'll see a white ring on your sport bra or your shorts or whatever. And if you touch it and touch it to your mouth, it'll taste real salty. Right. I am one of those. I lose salt when I sweat a lot.
I'm not one of those.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're, and yet you're slender and you have a difficult time holding onto water in your body with your vata constitution. And so.
Vata.
Yes, that's vata. In Ayurveda, the doshas are vata, pitta, and kapha. And so that's a very, without getting way into Ayurveda, the vata constitution is going to be the light, the airy one. You're going to tend to be thin, and you tend to not hold on to fluid. You tend to be tend towards dryness,
mm-hmm.
and that fits you.
Mm-hmm.
So it would stand to reason that in order to get more fluid into your body and hold it there, that you would want to have some salt and sugar in your beverage. That
all
doesn't
right.
mean dump a bunch of salt and sugar in it. Like I said,
no.
It can be something as simple as your favorite fruit juice with three parts water and a pinch of salt. That'll do. And if you are going to do a sport beverage, there are more natural ones than others. It's a good idea to avoid high fructose corn syrup. And a lot of the beverages are letting go of the high fructose corn syrup because it's become unpopular because of the fact that it goes straight to your liver. It can cause fatty liver. So if you are somewhere where you don't have a lot of options, though, and you are really sweating, say you're on a hot, sweaty bike ride and you're out and you have to go to the convenience store. See, my favorite thing to tell people to do is get coconut water. If you don't like the taste of coconut water, then, you know, if all they have is sport drink and, you know, they have chemical sport drink works. I mean, it's proven to work. There are studies on branded chemical sport drinks. So if that's what you got, you can drink that. That's fine. But if you do like the taste of coconut water, you can do a couple things. So if you're at the convenience store, if you're out and you're at the convenience store, you can buy a full bottle of coconut water. The major soda companies have bought a couple of coconut water companies, so
right.
you can find them in most convenience stores now. So the thing about coconut water has carbohydrate in it, and not a huge amount for the amount of fluid it is. It's not super high in calories. And it also is really high in potassium, and the potassium is very bioavailable. I find for me that if I'm hot and sweaty and a little off, as soon as I drink coconut water, I feel instantly better. My mother, who lost weight and was taking hydrochlorothiazide as a diuretic high blood pressure medicine, this commonly happens. The doc didn't lower her blood pressure medicine after she lost weight, and that was a problem. And one day she passed out, or she nearly passed out. And we figured out that her blood pressure medicine was too high. I told her to go directly to the store and buy coconut water, and she did. She loved the taste of the coconut water, and she said she felt better drinking the coconut water than before she ever passed out. And now she has stock in coconut. It's very funny. Because
if you're a storch, you have inventory.
Inventory. She has inventory, and I think she's taken out stock in one of the companies. I don't know. But, she's a fan. So if you're at the convenience store, there's a number of things you can do. Because we already said that having some salt, if you're sweating a lot, that salt is important. So if you want to try the coconut water, you can take coconut water. When you're at the convenience store, they probably have salt packets there. You know, because, you know, you can buy sandwiches at the convenience store. They're going to have salt and pepper packages. You can grab a salt packet and dump it into the coconut water. Now you have coconut water with a little bit of salt in it, and that's going to help you hydrate quicker. If you don't want full strength coconut water, you can get yourself a bottle of coconut water and a bottle of water. and you can mix them up, and you can dilute the coconut water and still throw in the that pinch of salt, and then you're going to hydrate better. And if you're at the convenience store anyway, stay in until you feel cool, you know, if that's what you need to do.
Right.
So the other thing is that, as I said, sodium is it's at high levels in processed food. So people who are eating too much sodium, that may be part of how they're getting their high blood pressure. It's controversial whether salt causes high blood pressure. It will raise your blood pressure to an extent. It doesn't raise blood pressure in everyone, because you have people who are like your constitution, Ron, and they take a bit of salt and it doesn't raise their blood pressure. Because you do need salt for various functions in your body. But the thing to do really is to stop eating so much processed food that's full of added salt and eat mostly whole foods, and then salt your food to taste with good quality salt. That's what we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we have our salad at night, we put salt on it. We put good quality we put good quality salt on it. We don't use salad dressing. We use olive oil and our favorite vinegar. You like balsamic. I have fire cider that I've been using, and I might use fire cider. I might use just straight up apple cider vinegar. I might use a flavored vinegar. There's all kinds of things that you can use, and then we season it. We use seasoning. So we put the good quality salt. We put fresh ground pepper. And we have seasonings that we get from the store that we throw on, and that's our salad. So you know that the word salad it comes from salada in Spanish, or insalat in Italian. Mm-hmm. And you know what sal means?
No.
Salt.
Salt.
Yep. And salada in Spanish means salted.
Salted.
Yeah. So insalate probably has a meaning that has to do with salt. So you expect that your salad should be salted.
I was going to say, does that mean you need to salt your salad?
Yeah, or salads are expected to be salted.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting. So having salt. So the idea is that salt, that then there's salt and there's salt. So if you buy poor quality salt, salt that's been processed and that's been through a factory, the salt might have sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get a lot of salt packets, or you buy, processed salt, it can have dextrose in it. Yeah. Yeah.
I want salt in my salt.
Right. So if just you want salt in your salt, then you look for the salt that comes from Utah, which they very proudly take it out of the salt flats and put it in a bottle, and that's it, or in a bag, and that's it.
Yeah.
Or if you get Himalayan salt, same kind of things. Himalayan salt, Celtic salt. Those salts are going to have not just sodium chloride, they're going to have trace minerals in them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's better to use that kind of salt, because those trace minerals are actually going to help you. The trace minerals, your molybdenum and your manganese and your stuff like that, those are going to be cofactors for important enzyme systems in your body, detoxification systems. Your superoxide dismutase has, I believe, manganese as a cofactor, and molybdenum. So there's all kinds of subtle enzyme systems in your body that require trace minerals to be helpful. So avoiding salt may not be necessary. Eating far less processed food is a really good idea, and then salting your food to taste with good quality salt. That's the way to go. All right. So there you go. So that's our deal with insulin and with salt. So let's move on to something else. So here is here's an idea, something about exercise. There's a nice study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine that exercise is tied to better mental health, but more isn't necessarily better. This came out on August 9th, 2018. It was written by Amy Orsieri-Herman. And as I said, it's in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's in the medical news. This is a notice that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine. The study was actually in The Lancet. So adults who exercise have better mental health than those who do not. And this was in a cross-sectional study in The Lancet Psychiatry. In the study, research examined data on 1.2 million adults who completed the CDC, the Center for Disease Control's behavioral risk factor surveillance system survey between 2011 and 2015. Overall, participants responded they'd experienced an average of 3.4 days in the past month in which their mental health was not good. Those who reported exercise in the past month had 1.5 fewer poor mental health days. That doesn't seem like a lot than those who did not exercise. All types of exercise was associated with better mental health, but popular sports, mostly team sports. Cycling was mentioned separately, and aerobic and gym exercises conferred the greatest benefit. So popular sports like team sports. So if you go out and you play volleyball with your buddies, you play basketball, or you go to the Mansfield Community Center and you play pickleball, which sounds, I have people who are huge fans of pickleball. So team sports. It doesn't say running here. What's up with that? It does say going to the gym and doing aerobic activity. So the team sports are going to help your mental health because, you know, you get very focused on the goal of whatever is going on in the team. So if you're playing volleyball, you're working with your teammates trying to get points. And so you're working together and you're having social interaction, which is very nice. And aerobic and gym exercises, again, when you go to the gym, often you get to see other people, you get to hang out with other people. If you're in a class, you get the benefit of hanging out with other people in the class. If you're doing Zumba, Zumba's just fun. So if you're in a class where you're dancing and you enjoy that, you're gonna enjoy dancing because dancing brings joy. It just does. It's dancing is a joyous activity. Not for everybody. I know that some people have a lot of stress around dancing. I am not one of those people. That's why I'm saying if you enjoy dancing and then you go to a dance class, you're probably going to have a good time. You're going to have a good time interacting with the teacher, and you're going to have a good time interacting with your classmates. And so you get that social benefit. Cycling. It's interesting that cycling is mentioned. So we're talking team sports.
Yeah.
We're talking aerobics and gym. And we are not, and then cycling separately. And it does not say running specifically, and it doesn't say swimming.
Yeah, and there's not a huge difference between team sports and cycling.
Right.
22.3% lower versus 21.6% lower.
Yeah. So cycling makes you happy.
Yeah.
That's
and
what
aerobic
this is
and
suggesting.
Gym activities, 20.1% lower.
Yeah. So the, right. So the
key point here, 3 to 5 times a week.
Yeah.
That's, I like to add that in there because people they think that maybe if they just do Weekend Warrior, then that's going to sufficiently do what they need to do.
Right. Yeah. So it has to be 3 to 5 times a week,
mm-hmm.
but also greater than 5 times a week. If your greater frequencies were linked to worse mental health.
Yeah. That's not surprising.
Yeah. Because you don't have any days off.
Well, you don't have any days off, and then you cross over that line of I want to do this versus I should do this, or
yes.
I have to do this.
Yes.
And when you start going into the shoulds and have tos, that kind of crosses the mental health barrier, does it not?
Yes. Well, and the other thing to do is, like I generally have at least one day a week where I don't do any exercise. I generally have 1 to 2 days a week where my exercise is very gentle. So, you know, I'm going out for a really easy bike ride that's low stress. It's just head clearing.
Right.
So I try to do that.
Yeah. If you're a professional athlete, then shouldn't have to is definitely part of your job description. So you do it.
Yeah.
But if you're not and you're trying to do it for health reasons.
Yes.
You know.
It's okay to take 2 days a week off.
It's just
or
fine.
If you don't want to take the day off, then go out. If you're exercising 7 days a week, 2 of those days should be so easy you could sleep through it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's even okay to go to that spin class that I taught this morning and not participate at the highest level.
Right.
If you're tired or if, you know, whatever, if that works in.
Yeah.
But if you did it the way we did it this morning, you walk out with your tongue dragging.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had some good tongue dragging this morning.
Oh, that's really terrific. Was your class full?
No, it's summer full.
Oh, what's
summer full means less,
5 or 6.
Less people. 6, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good.
But still, 6 people.
That's good.
That absolutely wanted to be there. And
that's great.
It's also mid-session right now. So it's that, you know, in between.
Yes.
So we get less people then, too.
Yeah, right. So people, and this is that time of year, late August into early to mid-September, where you take the days. You throw them up in the air and they just land anywhere because people are just all over the place. It's transition time.
Right. It's also that time of year, though, that you can work out hard and aggressively indoors with air conditioning.
Yes.
So you don't get the heat problem that you were talking about earlier in the show.
Yeah, that's true. Some people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to be outside.
Me too.
I just, I do well in heat. I do well because it's so easy to get your muscles nice and warm when you're outside.
Agreed.
I would say if you are not that person, now you're going to hear Ron and I say we enjoy working out in the heat, but we're experienced and we do well in heat. And when we are outside in the heat, we drink lots of fluids. And that's not an absolute because you and I do cramp sometimes.
There's a certain amount of acclimation also.
Yes.
So, you know, in the early season, if it gets super hot, you sometimes have some difficulties with it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've been doing it all summer long, then it's a little easier to deal with it.
That's right. And also, I think that for me, it helps that I work out indoors all winter because you're basically working out in the heat when you're working out indoors because you get really hot in there. And so when you get outside, it's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, how hot is my body getting when I'm outside on a day like today versus how hot am I getting when I'm indoors in a spin room? Now, the spin room is going to have fans.
Mm-hmm.
And outdoors you have fluid that's moving. You have fans that are, or you have breezes that are blowing the sweat off of you. So you're able to get cool. So be careful. If you feel like it might be nice to work out in the heat, make sure that you're acclimated to it. You don't do it for long, or if you're going to do it for a longer period of time, make sure you are acclimated to it and that you bring lots of fluid with you, maybe even electrolyte tablets, things that are going to help you that way. All right.
But so good for mental health.
It is. Yes. So we keep going back to the heat thing. So we just want to remind you that getting exercise is good for you and it's been studied to be good for you and that it is good for your mental health. And that it's in the 3 to 5 days a week. So again, if you're doing 3 to 5 days a week, you're all set. If you're doing more than that, you may want to cut back or just make sure a couple of those days are real easy, that you go out for a nice walk or that you, if you're on the bike, that you ride your bike really easy or you go for a swim or just play with your kids or, you know, just do something that's not a hard driving exercise. Because if you're working hard all the time, you'll stop looking forward to your exercise. If you feel like you have to work hard every single time you go out, you know, go hard or go home. I don't believe in that.
No.
Because you got to go slow to go fast.
Well, many studies don't believe in it either.
Right. So. Right. And there's a thing called overtraining.
Right.
And overtraining is no fun. Overtraining is like you pick up your bike, it's too heavy, you put it down, and you don't look at it for 2 months.
Right.
Yeah. So, and overtraining is also a serious condition. I mean,
overtraining,
the interesting thing about overtraining is that people don't understand exactly what it is. I don't want to go into a piece on overtraining. That's something we can do
on another show sometime.
Yeah, but overtraining is, it's a serious thing where people just, they are no longer able to put out effort in exercise. All right, let's do a fun one right now. Boxers or briefs?
Ooh.
Yeah. So get this. It depends on your, obviously boxers or briefs is a personal preference. It's what makes you comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If you like to have briefs and that's your thing, have at it. That's fine. But if you want to have a baby, you might want to consider wearing boxers. Why?
Right.
Why? Because sperm develop in a cooler environment than 98.6, than regular body temperature. That's why the scrotum is outside the body. So there's a developmental step that needs to occur in a cooler environment. So if you then take that scrotum and put it in underwear that is held up against the body, they're going to get warmer, especially on a day like today. So if you wear boxers, they're not held up against your body as well. So they're going to stay cooler. So there was a study in the, this came through on Medical News, and it was, this was on the New England Journal of Medicine's Medical Watch again. And when you want to jump into the gene pool, when you want to jump in the gene pool, one's preferences in underwear matters. And this was a study in human reproduction. So in this study, research asked about 650 men attending an infertility clinic what kind of underwear they customarily wore. They were asked to choose among boxers, jockeys, bikinis, briefs, or other, which included like boxer briefs, or they wore different things different days. And they also collected semen and blood samples. The men were divided into those primarily wearing looser fitting boxers and those mainly wearing tighter fitting underwear. Briefly, the outcome, the preference for boxers was associated with a higher sperm count and concentration and higher numbers of motile sperm. It was also associated with lower serum levels of FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. So what that means is that, so FSH is follicle stimulating hormone. It is a hormone that comes from your pituitary gland to stimulate the production of sperm. In women, it stimulates the development of follicles that lead to ovulation on the ovaries. So, but in men, it stimulates spermatogenesis. And so you're going to have lower FSH because you don't need as much because you're able to make more sperm. So your body's going to go, oh, there's lots of sperm hanging around, so I don't need to make so much FSH. If it's harder for you to make and keep sperm, then your body's going to have to raise the levels of FSH to get that going. So when you have higher FSH, you might have, if your FSH is higher and your LH is higher, guess what you're more likely to get?
I don't know what.
Hot flashes.
No.
I don't know if you get them
really?
That. Yeah. But when you have high FSH and LH, that's what happens to us. You know, because ours goes way up when we're in menopause, and when you're that high. So it's controversial what the cause of hot flashes is. But when there is some thought that LH causes a vasovagal response, and that's why you get the hot flashes, that you get this sweating response from the elevated LH, luteinizing hormone. And there's also the thought that when there's less estrogen around, there's less estrogen to bond to the hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus gets confused and thinks that you're cold. No, it thinks that you're hot. So it causes you to sweat to cool you off.
Right.
So when you have more estrogenic substances around, you tend to do better. So anyway, the findings in this study that men have more viable sperm coincides with the idea that tight underwear elevates your scrotal temperature, leading to testicular injury. That is, like we said, you need to have the scrotum at a cooler temperature when you're planning to make sperm. That's just how it goes. All right. So that was kind of a fun one. So if you're trying to conceive, boxers is the way to go. All right, so now we're in the realm of hormones and stuff. So in the realm of hormones, there's what in the heck is DHEA? So DHEA is this neat hormone. DHEA stands for dihydroepiandrosterone. Let me make sure I pronounce that exactly right. So DHEA is a neat hormone, and it's made by your adrenal glands. It's something that goes down. It's something that goes down as you get older. It's something that I will measure, especially in people as they are getting older. I might measure it in somebody who I suspect of having a hormonal imbalance. And so it has a lot of nice anti-aging properties, if you will. So it is a steroid hormone. It's made by the adrenal glands. It's also made by your ovaries or your testes. It's also made by your brain. It's a precursor to other hormones like estrogen and testosterone. And so when you take it, if you're like me and you're in menopause, you can take that and it will help you to make some more hormones. The body makes a sulfite derivative of DHEA, and you can measure that. You can ask your doctor to give you a blood test. But that's not when you take the supplement, that's not what you actually take. And so DHEA can help you to have more energy. Like I said, as you age, your body makes less and less DHEA, and that's why I tend to check it. And if I have a woman in my practice who's having menopausal symptoms, I'll measure her DHEA. It's one of the things I'll do. The nice thing about DHEA, it is an over-the-counter supplement. And so you can buy it at health food stores. You can get it from a practitioner. And it can give you some nice benefits. It can increase your testosterone and estrogen levels and therefore your sex drive. So women who have a low sex drive, especially that's something that can happen as part of menopause, DHEA can help to elevate it. It's very nice. And so when women get below at least 150, there's a reference range. When they get below 150, I start to ask them how they're feeling. They're in the double digits. I'm like, look, do you want to take some DHEA? I might consider not offering that to a woman if she's had a history of reproductive cancer. That's controversial, the idea of not giving, because DHEA is a bioidentical hormone. If you give it as a supplement, it is bioidentical. Your body knows what to do with it. It has a place for it. Is it true that bioidentical hormones are going to increase your chance of cancer? That's really controversial. We think that what causes reproductive cancers really is xenoestrogens, oxidative stress, and improper balances of hormones. And that's one of the mechanisms by which you get reproductive cancer. Having said that, you have to make a case-by-case judgment as to whether you're going to offer that a bioidentical hormone to someone. DHEA improves your brain function. It helps your memory. It stimulates neurons. It inhibits cortisol. So the thing about inhibiting cortisol that's so great is that you're going to feel less stressed if you have adequate DHEA on board. And if you're less stressed, you're going to remember stuff more. If you're less stressed, you're just going to be happier in general. That's kind of how that goes. It actually works in the way of the amygdala, so you have more visual awareness. So you're going to, when you see things, it's going to be more effective and you're going to remember it better. It also helps you to be more cheery. If you have high cortisol, you're going to be more crabby. And if you have less, you're going to be happier. It's cardioprotective. When you have less DHEA, you're going to have more risk of cardiovascular disease. It can help to reduce your blood pressure and lower your cholesterol, too. If your DHEA is low, it's going to be more difficult to conceive. If you have adequate DHEA, your eggs are going to be more healthy and you'll be more likely to be able to conceive, which is nice. It can help with your weight. DHEA helps to regulate blood sugar and helps to regulate your insulin levels. So if those are more in check, it might be easier for you to lose weight and to have to have a better body fat percentage. It also improves your insulin resistance. So whatever insulin you have around is going to be more effective. It's going to be able to bond more and you're not going to need as much. If you have too much insulin around, too much insulin promotes fat storage. So if you're more insulin sensitive, you don't need as much and you're going to burn more fat. So that's nice. It reduces inflammation. And it also helps, this is interesting, it restores normal colon length. I assume that means that if people are having digestive problems, colons can become tortuous. They can have twists and turns of them in them. They can get diverticuli where they're getting outpouchings, where there's not good muscle tone in the colon. And if colons are spastic, they can tend to tighten up and shorten up. So DHEA can calm that down. Probably one of the ways it calms it down is because it helps to lower your cortisol. And so if it lowers your cortisol, you're going to be more chill, dude. Yeah. So, yeah. DHEA improves your sleep. I need to remember to take my DHEA every day. it increases your REM, which helps with your memory. So your rapid eye movement sleep, that's the part of your sleep where you get a lot of health benefits from having REM sleep. When you're in REM sleep, you tend to remember your dreams better. You dream in all of the stages of sleep. But you tend to remember your REM dreams. When you don't have enough REM, that's really bad for your health. That's why people with sleep apnea can become very depressed, can have a lot of health problems because they don't get their REM, because they don't make it past, if they have active sleep apnea, but they don't make it past stage one sleep, and you've got four. So they never get into REM, and it's very bad for you. One of the things that happens when you're in REM is you basically become paralyzed, and you don't move. And that's really, really good for you to spend some time not moving at all. Take it from me, the power liar abouter.
Yeah, you're really good at it.
I love the power lie about.
Yeah.
That's very good for very good for cycling.
That would be
speed.
Your Fran off stage.
Yeah, it's very good.
But normally Fran is always on.
When
Fran is off, she is off.
I do both. I like to do both.
It's like flipping a switch.
I'm going to go on a cruise and I'm going to listen to lots of Jimmy Buffett. And I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to spend some time lying on the deck going,
I am dying to hear the results of the cruise.
It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, it should be very interesting.
DHEA is a proliferative hormone, so it improves bone health. There was a study in South Korean men that found that it helps to prevent osteoporosis in men. So if you got a guy who comes in and says, my doctor says I have low bone density and he wants to put me on a bisphosphonate, I'm like, no! So that's where that's where resistance training and things like DHEA come in. It also helps your muscles because it's a steroid hormone. It will help to increase your muscle mass on its own. Plus, you make more testosterone, so you get more muscle mass. It helps you with your menopause. So it helps you with one of the things that we unfortunately have in our menopause is we can have more discomfort during sex. So it helps with that. It helps with vaginal dryness. It helps with pain on intercourse. It's good stuff.
So where do we get some of this stuff?
I have it. It's in the house. And it may protect against colon cancer. I'm not too worried about colon cancer for me because of my intense vegetable eating.
Right.
But you know, if you're at risk for colon cancer, you may want to get into this stuff.
Or intense vegetable eating.
Yeah, both are good. Intense vegetable eating is kind of good for most people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say absolutely everybody, but there are certain circumstances where it's not a great thing. But if you're in good health, probably part of how you got there was intense vegetable eating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. DHEA has been shown to help with lupus. Lupus is an autoimmune condition. It's been shown specifically to help with symptoms, with various symptoms that happen in lupus. Also helps with tuberculosis. So it really is very helpful. So there's concern that if you take too much, that it could lead to more cancer. That's why, it's controversial. So whether that's true or not, and you have to take a lot of it. I mean, I take 15 milligrams a day, and people were taking 50 milligrams a day or more, which I don't generally recommend. This is something I tend to recommend to people, take the lowest effective dose, and I do quite nicely with 15 milligrams a day. Also, if you take too much DHEA, if you have too much DHEA, it can aggravate your schizophrenia if you have it. It can contribute to substance abuse. This is interesting. There was a study that showed that. And could also make you, if you make too much DHEA when you're high stressed, it can make you feel more stressed. In general, if you're healthy, though, and you take it, it's probably going to be beneficial. So it's something that you can talk to your doctor about and try. It is something you can easily get a level tested. So your doctor can test this for you, and you make a decision with your doctor as to whether this would be a good thing for you to take. It is something that is likely to enhance exercise performance because it helps you with insulin regulation. It helps increase muscle mass and bone density. It makes you happier, makes you less stressed. So all these are going to lead to increased exercise performance. All right. So that's enough stuff. So I'm going to sign off because you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. This is the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.